Carter, would you come on up, please? Ladies, if your husband leans over and says, this guy looks familiar, remind him that he has spoken to us three times. And so to introduce him, I will just mention three things. First, he's the president of the Lyman Hall Chapter, S-A-R. He is the editor of the Hornet's Nest, which I've talked about more than once, how good it is and what a good job he does. And as a member of the Georgia Society Color Guard. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Always glad to come back. I feel that I'm doing public service when I'm here. When I come to Mount Vernon Chapter, then Shep is not the shortest man in the crowd. We've been measured, and he's about 16th of an inch taller than I am, or as he likes to say, 17/64 of an inch, you know. But he is a man of his word. He said he would give me credit with my parole officer for doing community service time by coming. Tonight's a different topic than we've ever discussed before, and that was prelude to the revolution. American Revolution didn't happen just in an instant, Boston Tea Party, Boston Massacre. It had been years and years and years built up. It takes a while for people to get sufficiently enthused or riled up or disgusted about anything. Right now, in fact, I'm working on a class for Brunel University in the fall. I'll do 12 sessions that lead up to the Great War, the war to end all wars, what we know as World War I. Part of what we'll tell them about is that it almost had to happen with the pressures here and there and politics and geography and economics. It almost had to happen. Same thing with the American Revolution. There had been over 100 years of problems, disagreements, armed conflicts, demonstrations against the crown, against King George that we finally fought against, but against his father before it, and the one before that. And so that's what we're talking about tonight, is rebellions before the revolution. And if you look at the star down here, oh, it doesn't show on the television. It eats up my laser light. But okay, right there. That star is going to move from right to left. In other words, a reverse timeline as we go back in time. From what you see here is Lexington, early in the morning, April 16, 1775. My Patriot ancestors were not there. They joined in, like thousands of others did, in the next few weeks or so. I have a theory that if everybody who claims they had a Patriot ancestor at Lexington, we would have won at Lexington. But my family, like a lot of others, came in there. So let's go back in time. There was, yes, the Boston Massacre, but you know, the week before the Boston Massacre, there was a riot that included a British soldier shooting a 12-year-old Boston boy. Dr. Warren did the autopsy, proved that it was this musket ball. It didn't make the news, and it's not in the history books, but if you look deep enough, it was there. But even the Boston Massacre. Speaking of, let me advise you, in case you're so inclined, do not throw snowballs at armed soldiers who have been given orders to keep peace in the streets of Boston. That's what started it that day. Let's go back, though. And the War of Regulation, well, it's a little bit closer to us. I'm going to go back and forth in geography, up and down in geography. This is a little bit closer to us. The War of Regulation, just a few years before. William Tryon was the governor of North Carolina then, and he was doing a good job. He wasn't as crooked as some royal governors. Wasn't as well-liked as our governor here, James Wright, who was a favorite of not only the crown, but many of the colonists themselves. He came cross purposes with this gentleman. We have no real painting. He wasn't rich enough to ever have a portrait commissioned. His name was Herman Husband. He was a Quaker, a fighting Quaker. Now, how's that for a contradiction in terms? What they were arguing about is tax collectors. Now, people have hated tax collectors since who was the disciple that promised seven times and seven, so and so forth. Since then, Lois Lerner is not our favorite person either as a tax collector, right? Well, same kind of thing there. With justification, tax collector was charged with collecting X amount from this whole county or this whole area. And just turn the right amount in, and you've done a good job as a tax collector. So the way to do it is first make a provision for non-collection, namely double the tax on some people, so that if you fall short, you can still make your quota. And while you're doubling it anyway, just keep some for yourself and turn in the right amount, and it looks like you're doing a good job. They took offense to it. This is the Tryon Palace later on at Williamsburg, but that's its name for him, built for him later on. It came to Alamance, North Carolina. Regulators, they were called, were the ones who wanted to pay the regular tax, the ones who demonstrated against the Crown's officers, especially the tax collectors of the day. It came to armed conflict. There was maybe 1,000 militia, backwoodsmen, against about 800 or so of Tryon's royal militia. They're not regular soldiers. They were not redcoats. Maybe a few officers, although. And they met early in the morning. Herman Husband must have prayed that night, and the Lord revealed to him, you have no chance against this trained militia with your ragtag. Just pick them up as well. And so he left the field. He was not there for the morning of the battle. And the militia, when they saw that their leader, their firebrand preaching Quaker, had left for parts unknown, they kind of dissipated and they kind of got massacred. Governor Tryon's soldiers captured six of them and hung six of them, captured eight of them and hung six of them. The other two had excuses and family claims and so forth. The war in those days was like our Civil War years later. It would have been brother against brother and father against son. Who was a Tory and who was a patriot? Who was a loyalist and who was independence yet? The saddest part about the six who were hung is legend, never provable, but the very sincere suspicion that at least one of them, they got the wrong man. These are all militia. They're wearing their clothes from home and carrying their musket from home. Somebody on that side said, yeah, he was with us. It's actually his cousin. They have a feud going back to their grandfather in the Jacobite Rebellion 30-some years before. They'd been on the wrong side of each other back then in the clearances, got transported. They're on the wrong side of each other in this one. And it is entirely possible that one of the men hung as a regulator was really a loyalist himself. He claimed his innocence all the way. But how many times do they claim innocence all the way? 1768-71. 71 was the Battle of Alamance. It's now a state park. And as a scoutmaster in North Carolina many years ago, 1975, the bicentennial, we held a camp out on the battlefield. Very rare to do that. Another one, the Bloody Paxton Boys, a few years before. Notice the star moving back. 1764. These people were upset, not over taxes, but over the claim from the governor that there would be protection against the, well, may I say Indians, or must I say Native Americans, the aboriginal personages, okay, the Injuns is who they were, when they were marauding through the settlements and taking offense at people moving further and further west into their territory. They petitioned and got promises that there would be help. They never got the help. There is some documentation that leads to the the suspicion that the governor had a private deal with some Indian tribes about extra furs. They were doing the legal trade with the recognized Indian agents, the ones who had bought a license from the Crown to do the trading for pelts and buckskins and such. But the governor was running a little side job deal for extra ones strictly through his business connections. And so he didn't send help. Well, these guys took it on their own and got hooped up and maybe liquored up too, but that's happened before with soldiers, hasn't it? They set upon the first Native Americans they came to, the Conestogas. And yes, that's the same area that made the Conestoga wagon that went west. It was a wagon that was a boat. You've heard about that before. They wiped them out. Killed about 70 people, men, women, children, scalped them, cut them up. Terrible. Have I spoiled your dinner? I'm sorry. Anyway, the few that ran away, they chased after them, killed 14 more. In fact, they didn't quit until a delegation led by old Ben Franklin himself came and talked to them and calmed them down. The problem with the deal is the Indians that they set upon were Christianized, good, peaceable people, hadn't marauded anybody's outpost or hadn't taken action against any encroaching invader to their territory. They got the wrong Indians. So more of a massacre, but the sentiment was there. The Crown had made a promise and was not living up to it. Let's move back a little more. This is the other important part about this is it's the first recorded and published printed document stating their complaints against the Crown. A declaration of remonstrance. Not a declaration instrument, but it's a it's a detail of their complaints, line by line by line, like the Declaration of Independence ended up being several years later. Oh, the rebellions, 1689. James II and the 7th. That's he's the 2nd of England, but he's the 7th of Scotland, the Stuart king. He went away, and this so the religion switched from Catholic to Anglican. It switched Anglican to Catholic back then. And England had what they called the Glorious Revolution. Now, what's glorious about combat and murder and genocide? I don't know. William came in, William of Orange. He was from another country and of another religion. Well, when people in the Dominion of the Dominion of New England, you ever heard of the Dominion of New England? It's the original name for what we call Massachusetts. By the way, it included what we now call Maine at the same time, too, the Dominion of New England. They said, well, wait a minute. If things are changing back home, and there's a new religion is the official religion, we'll just do our own replacements here. It was a good chance to undo their governor, Andros, because he was a good, ardent Catholic, and now Anglican is the way to be, so throw him out and send him home. At the same time in New Jersey, same kind of thing, Jacob Leicester led a rebellion to throw out the royal governor, put himself in as royal governor. It didn't stick. This is the Nicholson was the man they put in. It got put down. Leicester was hung and dead and buried, and then 4 years later he was forgiven, pardoned, and most of his lands were reinstated to his family. Culpeper. Now, Culpeper is famous in the Revolution for Culpeper's militia and civil liberties ride and Culper spy ring, all really into Culpeper, Virginia. But in 1677, in other words, we're about 100 years before the Revolution. That's 100 years I'm talking about. It's the 100 years that was the women's suffrage movement. From about 1828, 1830, Andy Jackson's time frame, all the way to 1920, to the amendment to the Constitution. 13th Amendment forbade slavery, but it took 100 years, 1863 to 1964, for the Civil Rights Act. So it takes about that long. So we're at 100 years when we're talking Culpepper's rebellion. Culpepper was, again, upset about trade laws and like the Intolerable Acts or the Navigation Acts, things like this, where you must trade with England and you can't trade anyplace else. You must trade through an English authorized agent, and you must file through the ships through certain documentation and taxes to be paid. And anti-smuggling rules is what it was. Now, here in Georgia, South Carolina, there's no way to calculate, but some people would estimate that better than half of our business was smuggled in instead of it. We didn't care about the tea tax because we smuggled all our tea in anyway. Didn't pay any tax on it. But the Culpepper, he got caught and was led to his execution. I'll show you, here's one woodcut, and he's being led to his execution. Here's one a little bit more accurate. Notice the big leg. He'd lost a leg in the service of the crown in a previous war in Europe, and was a great leader, but didn't last that long. Bacon's Rebellion. Bacon's Rebellion, I want to check this just to be sure, because somebody asked a question the other day about it. Yeah, this one is just exactly, this is 1676, exactly 100 years before the Declaration of Independence. He had 1,000 men, was upset with the crown, again, not protecting the pioneers, the frontiers people, against Indian uprisings. Even to this day, we say, good Lord willing and the creek don't rise. I'll be there, good Lord willing and the creek don't rise. That doesn't mean the brook, the river limit. It means the Muscogee Indians. The creek don't rise means the creek do not rise up in rebellion again. They're very short-tempered, volatile people. Curious how they got the name. Their real name was Moshoshoggy or something like that. When they were run off by Andy, 1830 or so, they knew that they would be in trouble if they admitted who they were, so they changed their name to Muscogee as an anglicized version of their original Indian name. But the British always called them the Creek Indians because their culture was that they needed to live close to fast-moving fresh water. A deep pond would be good enough, but they liked rivers and streams, and so they couldn't say Moshoshoggy or even Muscogee, and so the Indians who lived by the creek. And that's why to this day we call them the Creek Indians. By the way, they had their pronunciation problems too. They had, in their tongue and in their language, it was difficult to say Yankee. And so they said something like Yankish, which is now Yankee. English, they meant to say English, but they said Yankish, which is now Yankee. And actually, that's a truncation. The real word here in Georgia is damn Yankee. Just so you know. But it was the same kind of thing. Governor Berkeley was supposed to, and kept promising that. Don't know that he was running an illicit side job fur trade or not. But Bacon stormed in with armed men and held the Virginia Council at musket point. And then they got the document they wanted, signed and sealed, okay, we'll give you better treatment. It didn't last, and so the next time he came, he burned the whole place down. A few months later, they came back and burned it all down. There was others. This is one up in New England area. It's called King Philip because that was the Christianized name of the cousin of Massasoit, and we all know Massasoit from New England history, the sachem, not the chief, but the sachem of the tribe there. There were others. Massasoit is the figure that is believed to be the natural formation of the man on the mountain, the face on the mountain, which is the New Hampshire state quarter from, 2006 or so?
Which fell off.
The quarter is the only place where it's still there. I was wondering if Massachusetts was going to make another quarter with the face gone again. We can't blame it on mankind or drilling in the area, or no fracking, and no highways, and no airports. It was just plain gravity. 15 feet per second, it fell. Been there for millions of years and famous to be a portrait of, declared to be Massasoit, but shortly after it appeared as the state symbol on their quarter, about 2006, 2007, and then you're right, the mountain fell apart. It's the only place it exists. Must have been a genius. This is Captain Church. He was the one who went after King Philip. We could go on for more and more and more and even further back if we want to. Most of them are the same kind of thing over and over again. There's not even a treaty, but a gentleman's agreement on trade with the Native Americans, and one side doesn't live up to it or another, and there's disagreements. Take it to the government, they won't do anything for you. They've sent us here, we're suffering on them, we were guaranteed protection, we're being overtaxed, we're being persecuted, we're being penalized by the parliament. In 100 years, I bet you'd fight too. And I thank you much.